you, the Madness Collective.
Collective, we are in a new space. Yay! Us. And we're actually, we have a new time frame. So you'll see how you like this one. All right. Madness topics include the GOP planned the shutdown months ago, gangster rabbis in New York, Kanye and Kimmel air out their grievances on the, no, what did they do? They clear the air between the two of them. Lauryn Hill is out of jail. Feature artist is Laura Mvula. And special guest is Stanford University of History professor, Allison Hobbs. Yay!
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Of course. Glad you're here.
Quickly! All right. The GOP planned and prepped for the shutdown months ago. So shortly after President Obama was reelected, a group met in secret to discuss how to defund Obamacare. They literally put together a blueprint with a toolkit and talking points for how to address. If you're blamed for the shutdown, what do you say? Like, this was all put together in print, written down. There was a meeting. This whole thing is funded by a very small group of wealthy conservatives, led primarily by the Koch brothers. And over the past year, one of their organizations that they are associated with disbursed more than $200 million to nonprofit organizations who are dedicated to defund the Affordable Care Act. Like, and everything associated with this. So the Medicare, is it Medicare or Medicaid expansions that are supposed to be happening?
It's a Medicaid.
The Medicaid expansions, which right now, the states that are not expanding Medicaid are either all controlled by Republican governors or have Republican-dominated legislatures. Right. So it's scary. And it's actually as far as early this year as March 27th, when there was a what's called a continuing resolution, which allows the government to approve their spending bills, they were trying to defund it then. They were like, we are prepared to be okay with shutting down the government to have this jump off. March 27th didn't do it, but I think it made more sense from a strategic point of view to do it closer to when they're doing it now, because the debt ceiling is also like they're coming up against all these deadlines, so that if we can sandwich Obama in, then that's what we're gonna do, which is what the situation we have now, but it's not working.
I just don't like their tactics, because there's one organization called the Repeal Coalition, and they basically sent a letter to Republican lawmakers, and they said at the bare minimum, you are not to accept any deals that are on the table without throwing in a minimum 1 year delay of the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. And it's real gangster, because these are Republicans who didn't necessarily, who weren't necessarily on board with it, and now they feel threatened because these organizations are so powerful. There's one of them. What's the one? There was one you had to, your donation had to be a minimum of $100,000 a year.
Yeah, that
was the dues. Yeah, the dues for one. And it's scary, because it's taking the power out of the hands of the people. And it's almost like, I equate it to almost what happens with corporations sometimes.
Yeah.
We look at corporations like they're people, and they're not. And these are organizations that are, you know, people vote. Your vote is supposed to count. Mm. This makes me feel like my vote doesn't count if I don't have a lot of money to donate to an organization that can represent what I think should be happening with our country.
Well, I think that this is really raises a much larger question, exactly as you're saying, about the implications for democracy and the democratic process. And I think that part of what was so inspiring about the 2008 election was that you had new populations of voters coming out in mass numbers. You had younger voters, college students, you had Mexican Americans, you had African Americans, you had more women voting. And that's the kind of democracy that we want to see, a participatory, a vigorous democracy. And this infusion of all of this money
by a small group of people,
by an extremely small group of
people, completely trying to push their own agenda.
Exactly.
That's it, strictly. And like, they are trying to control the process.
And it's really unprecedented in American history. So the fact that a freshman
congressman
from North Carolina, Mark Meadows, the idea that Mark Meadows can get together this gang of 80 that can have this much power and that can have this much control over the government is really problematic.
Yeah, and it's never been this aggressive before, because before, I mean, people, Republicans have attached have attached little amendments to spending bills before, right. but it was like for yeah. abortion and things right. like that. It wasn't something this huge where you're trying to repeal something right. that was passed.
A law that's been held up as constitutional. Tina, did you want to jump in?
I'm just amazed at how scared the Republicans are. That's what they're showing me. It's like they are terrified of something huge right. changing. And
giving millions of people health care.
Right.
Like, that's part of it. Part of it is hatred of Obama, but, like, literally, and they know.
And I'm just trying to understand it. I'm just okay. trying to really understand yeah. it. Republican point of view. Okay. Now, why would they be so anti giving everybody health care? Is it because it always has to do with money? So, evidently, are they losing money and power when you're helping the world? For me, it seems like such a beautiful thing. Finally, people are getting health care. Why is it making Republicans so mad? They lose money.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing to think about. The plan that's in place now for how the Affordable Care Act came together, the basic bare bones of it came from a Republican-dominated organization mm-hmm. called the Heritage Foundation. So when Hillary Clinton was trying to push way back in the day right. for health care, this was what the Republican response put together was this system.
I know, they liked it then.
It doesn't even make sense.
They started it because that's the same organization that it says Jim DeMint is he left Congress for the Heritage Foundation. So initially, they were a part of that whole process of...
I don't know the exact okay. detail, but yes, they were a part of this Affordable Health Care Act from their own point of view.
Okay.
It wasn't called that then.
It was
that was their health care.
So the question is, are they so anti it because now Obama is the one in charge of it?
I think it's a large part of it.
And so they don't want this president to look successful.
Well, part of it, too, is they don't want...
It's that, and then I think it's also that, you know, this is his signature piece of legislation.
Yeah.
This is something that... both Republicans and Democrats have been trying to pass for 60 years.
So, right.
so the fact that Obama is the one to do it,
he's right.
this
so
is historic.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. And yeah. also because it has been passed, because the Supreme Court has said that it's constitutional, even if a Republican were to win were to become president in 2016, they can't repeal it.
Good.
So I think what they're seeing is that this is going to have a long-term effect
yes.
and that it's enshrined in the law. It can't be repealed.
They're such fucking sore losers.
They are. So next up, yes,
ahead.
thank you. No, Allison was summing it up very nicely. Yeah.
Well, I was just...
They're sore losers. This is whack. Next up is the debt ceiling.
Okay.
So then the debt ceiling, and very, very quickly, the government spends about $60 billion a day paying its bills. As of October 17th, we will only have $30 million to pay our bills. So some bills aren't going to get paid. It's just like you got $1,000 in the bank, you got to pay rent, you got to pay your phone bill, you got to pay your car note. Something's not going to get paid on time. And so one thing that might happen is because we do owe China a lot of money and we have to pay on the interest that we owe. So we might pay China and not pay our Social Security payments.
Right.
We might not pay for certain things with defense. So that has never happened,
right.
that
right.
we did not pay our bills.
Right.
And the last time that we did have this fiscal cliff crisis, you remember this was the first time ever in our country's
right.
history that our credit rating was downgraded.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, which had dramatic repercussions. So it's a very dangerous thing. And what I think is hopefully going to happen now is that more people on Wall Street are going to be speaking out
yeah.
about the yeah. catastrophic
yeah.
Depression. We can
exactly.
go to a deep, deep depression.
Exactly.
Yeah. I read that yesterday. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, we've never had to live through anything like that. And so I just don't foresee it. I don't know if I'm just way too optimistic, but I just...
you do tend to be very optimistic.
I am. I'm like, I just can't imagine going through a Great Depression like how our grandparents had to go through.
But here's the thing. For what?
Right.
Because you people hate Obama. That's really where this is.
Is that what it is?
That is the core of this.
Well, you know what? Part of it, too, just to be fair, Republicans tend to frown at the government overstepping its boundaries. That's their perspective on it. And that's why one of these organizations had a commercial where it showed a woman getting a pap smear and they showed her legs up and then Uncle Sam popped up in the middle.
Because they're saying that
the government should have nothing to do with health care.
But yet they still want to control what happens with your womb and your ovaries and be all in the mix with that.
There's a certain level of hypocrisy.
Your woman parts.
So let's just understand the fundamentals of this. So I'm guessing that the Republicans are more a group of people that they want to keep the power for just a select few.
To themselves.
Where Democrats want everybody
That's exactly right, because here's the problem. If every single Democrat voted Democrats would win every single election.
Yeah, that's definitely
every single
true.
Time by an enormous margin.
Yeah.
So because there are more Democrats in the United States. Right.
Republicans are Republicans. More mobilized. They got a lot of money. Yeah.
But so for Republicans, they have two choices. They can either create platforms that reach out to people and they can either sell their Republican ideologies in a way that converts people to the Republican Party.
They do very
or
well.
Or they can disenfranchise people.
Yeah.
Because there's either they've got to choose one of two paths. Yeah. Otherwise, they will lose every time.
Yeah.
Because of the demographics. No, I mean, really. So
no,
that goes to your point of why they're trying to disenfranchise. I mean, this goes to all of the issues around voting rights. And all of these other things, that the less people that vote, the more likely a Republican is to win.
Right.
And so that gets back to the healthcare issue, because the thing that I think Republicans hate so much about healthcare is that, wow, people are demanding this. I mean, these systems were crashing. Like 8.6 million people went to healthcare.gov. That's enormous. Yeah. That's huge. So if you start converting all these people, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I love Obamacare. This is actually great.
I want to be involved more. It takes the power away from Republicans.
Exactly.
When people are healthy and doing much better, it really changes the whole dynamic.
What kills me, though, because I'm like, you have healthy people, and, oh, God, pay them a living wage, and they can buy more shit, which keeps the economy strong and stuff. And yet and still, if they're out of power, they're not the ones controlling that process, then this is where you're saying the insecurity and the insanity
right.
jumps in.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we had a couple more topics, but we don't have time to cover them. So please go to our website, and you can read about the rabbis that were kidnapping husbands to make them and actually in, like hitting them with cattle prods in sensitive areas to make them give their wives a divorce. This was happening in New York. And then there was a 9-year-old who stowed away on a flight to Vegas from Minneapolis.
Little fucker.
He went through security.
I would beat the shit out of him.
He sat down at NPC.
Oh, I would beat his ass.
You gotta give him a pat on the back, though. That's impressive.
I mean, I was a little torn. I was kind of like, he was going to visit a friend he met on the online gaming situation.
That's amazing.
He was like, deuces.
Speaking of deuces.
Stay tuned for second two. Thanks.
She walked toward you with her head down low. She wondered if there's a way out of the blow. Who's gonna take her home this time? She knew that this time wouldn't be the last time.
Welcome back. We're just gonna jump into it. Kanye and Jimmy Kimmel squashed their beef on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Good. That's what I was trying to say earlier.
Yeah. I have opinions. What did you guys think?
I thought he didn't sound as crazy as he sounded when he did the Zane interview.
I thought he looked crazy.
See, I thought he looked less crazy.
No, he was expressionless. Until
yes, he was.
And that's very strange because he didn't used to act like that. He's nervous.
Criticizing everybody jumps on him every single thing he does. It's a really rough life for him.
Are you kidding me?
America,
you are
so
sipping
hard.
The Kool-Aid.
Everybody is so hard on him. We are so hard on
him. He won't shut the fuck up. He constantly talks. He never shuts the fuck up.
That's what he does. He's an artist.
So if you constantly talk, you're going to constantly be criticized. Fucking disappear and nobody will do skits about you.
So, you said, why did he look that way? I think he's a little nervous. He doesn't know which way to act.
Tina, at this point in the game, how are you nervous? You've performed in front of millions of people.
Is he trying to change his image, do you think?
I think there's something to that. Because here's the thing. During the interview, which is like how many different... six different YouTube videos if you watch it, if you didn't watch it live.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It's long. It's very long. But he kind of stays very still. And like you said, he's kind of staring off someplace. He's not looking at Jimmy. It's not clear he's looking at the audience. He's not really looking at the camera. You don't really know what he's looking at. So it's a little disconcerting. Yeah. But I listened to it. So I wasn't actually watching it the entire time, except for certain things that would happen.
You
and
can't.
I was
no,
and
this, you had to watch it. Well, he appeared manic. He was just going, he was rambling. He was going on tangents.
But
and he talked about himself the entire time. He's named. name dropping. It was,
but you know what? I'm so used to that by now that that didn't even faze me. Like, he name drops. He's talking about all these designers. I don't know who the fuck these people are, nor do I care. But you know what? Whatever, Kanye, you are fashion. So I just still thought he sounded calmer than the BBC interview. And was it the BBC?
It was Zane Lowe, I think. Yeah, that was, it was a BBC.
But what BBC I also appreciate is that he explained some of the stuff that he was just rapid fire spewing out of his mouth during the BBC interview. That was helpful. Like, he's like, and then when I was talking about this, this is what I meant. Yeah, take a breath. Explain to me what you're talking about. It, for me, it wasn't until the very end where he got passionate. And it was actually, I think, within context. He was talking about kids and education. And he got a little out of control talking about Kim and getting a star on a Walk of Fame.
Right, yeah.
I was like...
See, to me, like, that part, that was like Miley licking the hammer in the Wrecking Ball video. It's like, I can give you a little leeway, but then when you bring, like, bullshit like that into the conversation, I'm like, you're fucking crazy.
But he explained why he compares himself to Jobs and Michelangelo and Jesus. He's like, those are my idols. Those
yeah,
are my
but
heroes.
You know what? You know what? The reason I have a problem with that, that's something that you should aspire to. You don't compare yourself necessarily to your idols. Who does that? Who says I'm Michael Jackson-ish? And who does that? You aspire to that.
What's the saying, until you walk a mile in my shoes, whatever.
In my moccasins.
Yeah.
Well, Tina, you can say that about anybody, so we shouldn't have criticisms about anyone.
But here's, go ahead.
In a certain way, when it comes to an artist like that, to be a great artist, you are in a certain mind frame. You're not normal. Michael Jackson, a lot of people that are great, they are not normal.
There's
people.
A lot of them that are, though.
He said,
that's not an excuse.
I do give him props for speaking his mind. I do that. Regardless, if he sounds crazy, I give him props for speaking his mind all the time. He makes no apologies about that. I like that he admitted that he's inappropriate at times. I'm glad you know that you're aware of that. But one thing that was funny is he's like, for me to say that I wasn't a genius, I'd just be lying to myself and you.
That's funny.
I mean, it's funny, but just the narcissism is just.
Word.
He says stuff like that all the time.
But at the same time, and I do not at all pretend to be an expert on music or on Kanye but I sort of feel like, isn't that his whole persona?
It is.
Like, I almost feel like, wouldn't we be disappointed if he came onto Jimmy Kimmel and then he was just like, I'm just a regular guy, you know, I just walked my dog and
it's
I'm
what
just
makes
doing
him
this.
Who like, he is. It's
right.
What
it's
makes
like
him
that
is.
Totally over the top, totally exaggerated, histrionic. Like, I feel like that's what is so compelling. Like, I feel like that's why you watch him on Jimmy Kimmel.
So I have a question for you. When he talked about the drug dealers trying to get his publishing rights and him saying, no, you have to kill me. Like, I mean, it was a little hyperbolic, but I was like, I got a little bit more appreciation.
Over the place.
But he's always all over the place. Right.
It's what makes him a great artist, which makes him write the things that he writes and makes him go on stage in front of all those people. You have to be a little bit different.
What makes him a great artist is his artistry, not the shit that he does when he's beefing with Jimmy Kimmel.
There's a lot of thoughts coming.
Translate that into music. Stop talking about it. Shut the fuck up. Okay, we're going to move on from Kanye. You won't see this until Tuesday night, but a clip was released.
I was like, when is it coming on?
Yeah, but Kendrick Lamar took a jab at Drake during the BET Hip Hop Awards cipher. And I'm going to read the quote from it. He says, nothing been the same since they dropped Control and tucked the sensitive rapper back in his pajama clothes. Ha ha. Joke's on you. High five. I'm bulletproof. Your shits will never penetrate, pin the tail on the donkey, boy, you been a fake. Now, this is, I mean, that's clear.
Tina, why are you shaking your head?
There's no doubt about it, that was aimed at.
I don't give a fuck. And I don't know, I'm like,
I'm sorry, Antoine.
I don't care. I mean, I guess I don't know why we should care. I'm sorry. And it's nothing against you. I understand that it's a good rap line. Like, I was watching it with some friends and they were like, ooh, that's a good rap
line. It really isn't a good line.
Yeah, it's
not a good line. It's supposed to be the cipher, so it's almost like they're supposed to be freestyling. He did not just come up with this off the top of his head. He prepared this.
And I'm sorry, Antoine, I didn't mean to cut you off. She was just so vehemently shaking her head that I was like, curious.
I'm just amazed that it makes such big news that, you know.
But you're for Kanye being bigger than life. Why does that not apply to these artists? These people expressing themselves, artistry, as you always put it. So why are you, I don't understand, which side are you on? Make a choice. Take a stand.
Well, really? I'm not going to argue with you whatsoever, but I do hear your point, and yeah, that is part of his persona, and I get it.
Kanye participates in this type of shit all the time.
I get it. I guess there's
does
just no way.
Does he beef with people, though? Kanye doesn't really beef with Cash.
Yeah, he does from time to time. He and Drake had a beef. They had some subliminal shit going on record.
That was real quiet.
Like, yeah, but all I'm saying is that he's not outside of that. He's participated in that before.
It's not anything that's ever like jumped out at me. So
yeah,
and Drake is sensitive. Like, come on, like let's not front. Like,
but and the other thing that happened with this is Erykah Badu shot out a tweet, and she said it was last Friday. She said, "Drake, you got to come back, boy. This is hip hop." Because Drake hasn't really responded, although some people argue that he has responded on.
He shouldn't respond. He shouldn't waste his time.
I mean, to be fair,
I'm kind of with you on that.
Kendrick's album sold 241,000 copies in his first week. The Good Kid, Mad City. Drake's third album sold 658,000 in his first week. So if I was Drake, I wouldn't give a fuck and I wouldn't respond either.
Yeah.
So Lauryn Hill was released from prison.
Yeah, give us free.
She's doing the most right now. She wrote a letter of recognition to her fans, which Tina is going to read in just a second. She also released a new single called Consumerism. She was supposed to be on house arrest, but she convinced the judge to let her go on tour until December 31st and delay her house arrest. So she goes on house arrest for 3 months starting January 1st. So from November 15th to December 31st, she's going to be on tour. Hopefully she shows up for all the dates. But Tina, could you read her letter?
Firstly, I want to thank everyone who wrote letters and sent packages and books. Because of you, there was not one day that I didn't receive mail while I was away. I appreciate that. Know that many of your letters not only touched me, but continue to confirm for me what I already knew but needed to hear again, that sincere expression has a serious purpose. If one of you had been touched, picked up, encouraged, or prevented from succumbing to some measure of social or spiritual decline, then it was worth it. Folks, walk strong, seek light and universal reproof in all things. Know that man-made concerns and universal concerns are not always in agreement. Obviously, strive to please God. Thank you again and again. In love and freedom, Miss Lauryn Hill.
And we can never get that minute and a half back.
I love her. That's ridiculous. I love her.
Did you write her in jail? Did you express?
Did you send her a book?
No.
You okay?
I'll say you should have sent her a book. You're a professor.
So that's Lauryn. I mean, y'all know how I feel about her.
To listen to her song "Consumerism."
It's heavy. It's deep.
It's so overwhelming.
It's good.
Oh my, yeah. It's a lot.
Serious.
I can't say that it's good music that you're going to go out and dance to
you're
or
not,
anything like that.
It's not good music.
But it's definitely educational. It's
music
it's
to turn off.
It's a conversation piece. I think it's something you should definitely check out.
Just look at some pictures and remember the good old
days. No. We need more music like this. We need more artists that are conscious, that are talking about something. It's a great song.
You know who's talking about?
What's the argument of the song? Or what's the
She's talking about consumerism. She's talking about the world today, the problems with the world today, and consumerism.
Isms. Okay. She lists a bunch of isms.
Okay.
With a really heavy, quickly, almost kind of like spewing.
We're going to move on to an artist that's relevant right now who is not in jail. Miley Cyrus was on SNL last Saturday. Now, I don't know if you guys got to see all the skits. A lot of them, for me, left much to be desired, but the shining moment, this heifer sang her ass off. She killed it on both songs. When she sang Wrecking Ball, and it was acoustic. Wrecking Ball wasn't. She did We Can't Stop. She did an acoustic version of it. She also did a spoof where she played Michelle Bachmann and one of the guys from SNL Boehner. Yeah.
That was actually hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a really good sketch.
Yeah.
Whether all the sketches were good or not, what she showed me is, wow, she has an amazing sense of humor. I already knew she had a sense of humor, but she's really great. Witty, timing, and I guess her musical ability is fantastic.
Yeah. So I was entertained when she was singing. Otherwise, last thing I'm going to mention is Beyonce just released a calendar.
Were we supposed to be able to click on more pictures? Because I could only see the one picture.
No, she only released one picture where her booty is popping out, the black and white one.
That was...
Yeah, I guess more money. She's making more money.
Yeah.
More money for her. And Lady Gaga reveals the cover of her art pop album. Now, I don't know if you guys realize it's actually a sculpture.
Yeah.
It's a Jeff Koons sculpture.
Yeah.
She mentions Koons in applause.
It's interesting. It's art.
Yeah. I thought it looked amazing. That's what he's known for, taking just kind of like household objects, like balloon animals and stuff and blowing them up. So that's it for this segment. Coming up next is the feature artist.
She is a British soul singer songwriter from Birmingham, UK. In 2008, she formed a jazz neo soul group called Judy's House. She participates in the choir, and she was working as a receptionist when she sent out two demos. And one of them to Music Industry. One of them, Steve Brown, heard the song, sent it to his manager, who has now become her manager, and kind of was sort of just that trajectory. But I came across her, actually another friend on Facebook had posted about her, and I was like, oh, who's this woman? Listen to her songs. I love her voice. There's two songs I really love. She, which she does a live performance on her website. It's available on her website, but it's also just on YouTube. And then the other one is Green Garden, which is, I love the video. It's brown skinned black women, and they're just kind of like clapping. It's really up tempo.
It's
like,
amazing.
Yeah,
it's absolutely
gorgeous.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It inspired me so much. I'm like, wow, this is what music is supposed to be.
Yeah.
It felt good. It was right. And when I was watching that, I kept wanting to turn it off because I wanted to do something else, but I was magnetized. I was pulled into her. But again, the video, Green Garden, amazing.
Yeah, so it's please, please, please check her out. Green Garden, She are, like, I think, our two favorites. She's just a beautiful voice. She's vocally, she's just amazing. So the other two songs that I like from the album are Make Me Lovely and That's All Right. So check her out.
I will never be what you want, and that's all right. Got my skin ain't light, and my body ain't tight. I will never be what you want, and that's all right. Got my skin ain't light, and that's all right.
Tell me. And we are back, and very quickly we will chat with Allison. Thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really appreciate it. So Allison Hobson is an assistant professor in the Department of History at Stanford University. She graduated magna cum laude from Harvard, and she received a PhD with distinction from the University of Chicago. She has won numerous teaching awards because she's wonderful and amazing. Aww. She has appeared on C-SPAN and Tavis Smiley's program on National Public Radio. Currently, she's finishing a book manuscript that examines the phenomenon of racial passing in the United States from the late 18th century to the present. Her book is titled A Chosen Exile, A History of Racial Passing in American Life, and it will be published by Harvard University Press in September of 2014. Yay!
Thank you.
So, what'd you say?
I said amazing.
Yeah, I know, right?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So how's the book going?
It's going well. It's a sort of solitary process of finishing, which is difficult because I definitely think of myself as more of a people person.
Really?
So a little bit. I really love teaching. I really love being in the classroom. So I sort of like, I have a research assistant and I like make her work in my office with me so I can like have some
company.
I do buy her coffee. Yeah.
So why did you decide passing?
I decided passing because of
story. Actually, you might want to elaborate what passing is.
Sure. So racial passing is a phenomenon where light-skinned African Americans pass as white. So this has happened throughout history, as I discuss in my book, and it has a very personal. I have a very kind of personal stake in it because I have a family member who passed as white. And so this has been a story in my family for years where we had a relative who was very, very light-skinned, but she grew up in Chicago. She lived in Chicago for her whole childhood. And then she only had black friends. She went to a predominantly black high school. Then after she graduated from high school, her mother told her, look, you're going to pass as white and you're going to move to California and you're going to become a white woman. And she said, wow. I absolutely, she said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to leave. But her mother felt like this was the best thing for her. This was 1930s right. and 40s. Mm-hmm. This was giving her opportunity.
You know, for some reason, I thought this was like
1982. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I should have said that. This was like in the 1940s.
Okay, all right.
So essentially, her mother felt like this was the best way to give her daughter more opportunities.
Yeah.
So she moved to Los Angeles, and she married a white man, and after she had children, and no one knew anything about her past.
They didn't come out brown, the kids?
They didn't.
Okay.
So everyone accepted them as white, accepted her as white. No one knew anything about her past. She receives a very inconvenient phone call where her mother calls and says, look, your father's dying. Mm-mm. You need to come back home.
So her husband didn't know?
Her husband didn't know.
Oh, wow.
And
that's the whole point.
She told him when the baby's coming.
My relative said to her mother, I can't come back. I'm a white woman now. I can't.
That's what you told me to do.
I can't come back. Exactly.
This was all or nothing.
She said, you forced, you know, this is what you wanted for me.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing it. I can't go back.
Yeah.
So part of what I've been really interested in looking at in my book is what was lost when people passed as white. Because what we often focus on is what was gained. We focus on people had greater economic opportunities. Yeah. People were able to live in better neighborhoods. People had
education.
All kinds of access. But what I'm trying to explain is, well, what was the sense of family, the sense of community, the sense of personhood?
You lose your culture. That's part of who you are.
Exactly, exactly. So that's the part. My book is really about loss. And it's really about what you lose by making the decision to pass.
Oh my God, we're all going to get autographed coffees.
Absolutely, of course. Yeah.
Good. So, and then when you go back to the classroom, because you're on hiatus now, right?
Right. I'm on leave for the year and to finish up my book and to get started on my second project. And then I'll be really excited to go back to teaching in 2000. Yeah.
We can take a field trip up. Take the Madness Collective to Stanford.
Hey.
Oh my God. Hey. The Madness Collective will be
on the road. On the road. That's a great idea.
It's going to be awesome. Well, Austin, again, thank you so
thank
much.
You so much thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you guys love the new and improved Madness Collective. You know, we'll be back with more. Thank you. I'm talking about like next week. This is it. We're done.
No more segments.
Yeah, no more segments. It's done. We're done. This is it. It's great. It's condensed. It's wonderful. Thanks.
Bye.
Tune in for new episodes every Monday at www.themadnesscollective.com. We out this bitch. West Side.
Nobody out there, but it's so good now. Bathing the sunlight, don't mind if rain falls. Take me outside, sit in the green garden. Fly on the wings of a butterfly, high as a treetop, down again, putting my bag down, taking my shoes off, walking the carpet.